This is Tiger Woods, and welcome to another golf podcast presented by Bridgestone.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of another golf podcast presented by Bridgestone. I'm Adam Rayberg again, and I'd like to welcome back Amelia Migliaccio back to the show. Amelia, good to have you back again.
Thank you, Adam. It is always a pleasure to speak with you.
I heard that you got some mail this past week. Can we discuss that? Can we just discuss that for the entire time, please?
Yes. We can't do it for the entire time because we have some special guests that we need to talk to. But I did receive some special mail. It started with an email that said... from UPS that said you have a package coming from Augusta National. So on January 11th, I received my Augusta National Women's Amateur acronym ANWA invitation.
ANWA.
This year. So it was super, super exciting. If you haven't seen the actual invitation, it's very extravagant. It's with like a gold stamp in the middle, and Chairman Ridley has a letter inside and specifically inviting you to Augusta National to play. So it's really exciting. It'll be my fourth ANWA, which is absolutely crazy to believe. And my fiance Charlie will be caddying for me this year. So many exciting things.
Ooh,
to look
big
forward
responsibility.
To. I know. Everyone always tells him that, but he does a great job. So he's caddied for me before, and yeah, it's going to be so much fun. I am literally counting down the days. They treat us so well, and I literally can't wait to play Augusta.
Yeah, that's incredible. First, congratulations, and then secondly, you might have to bring that invitation down to the PGA show so we all can see it and just marvel at its beauty and the invitation of it all. So we'd love to see that down the PGA show. You've had some great success at the Augusta National Women's Amateur in the past, and you know, I know you're looking forward to it. I know you're playing some pretty good golf, you know, keeping up with you at Wake and the program there, number two in the nation. Still number two, right?
Yep. Still number two. Okay. We'll plan to be number one soon once we get our tournaments running. But yeah, really excited for the season. And our coaches set it up to where we actually have a little bit of a break before ANWA, so the other girls that are playing have time to prepare.
Cool.
So yeah, very exciting stuff to be looking forward to. But we also have some exciting things next week with the PGA show. You want to tease some of the listeners with that, Adam?
Yeah, so the PGA show, which is the PGA merchandise show, is a big event down in Orlando where all the major players are down there. It's a huge gathering of everybody and anybody in golf. So we always look forward to it from a brand perspective. I look forward to it because I'm a golf nerd deep in my heart. I like to kind of peruse around the floor and get out of our booth and kind of take a look around. But next week we're going to be down there. Amelia is going to come down and join us. We're going to do kind of a special emergency podcast that week. We usually launch these things every 2 weeks. So if you're listening to this one now, we're going to come out with an extra one next week because we want to give you guys kind of an inside look at what we're going to announce at the PGA show. So we're going to have Dan Murphy, our president and CEO, on. He's going to kind of talk about the golf landscape, the Bridgestone industry, and how we're kind of doing. We're going to bring in Elliot Mello to where he's going to talk about all the new launches, all the new golf balls. We have a lot of golf balls we're launching, so he's super excited to kind of discuss that and kind of pop the lid on the new things we're doing. We're going to talk about fitting and the new auto system. We've got kind of an update on auto that we'd like to share with you guys. So next week, if you're listening to this Thursday today, then next week, join in the week of the PGA show, and we'll have some special guests on to talk all things Bridgestone and kind of move forward from that. So I'm excited, looking forward to it. Amelia, have you been to the show before?
You know, I was at the PGA show a couple years ago, actually in 2019, as a guest for Golf Channel. We were actually talking about ANWA. They brought me and Pauline Roussin, who played at South Carolina, but this will be my first time as, I guess, an employee with a company. So I'm really looking forward to it. I don't even know all the lists of products and ideas and things that you guys have launching. So I'm just excited to be there, not only to promote all the incredible things Bridgestone has going on and going for them and for their customers, which I am also a customer and loving my RXS, but just everything that you guys have coming out that's really just people are going to love.
Yeah, it's been, you know, as you know, the R&D process takes many years. So we've got a couple golf balls that we're launching that we're super excited and anxious to kind of get out there in the market and start speaking to them. But let's not keep the listeners waiting much longer. We have two special guests coming on today. We're going to have a double, and it's two good friends of mine in the golf business, and they're pretty amazing people, great golfers, even better people. So let's bring on two friends of mine, Hannah Gregg and Frederick Lindblom. Well, we're super excited to have Frederick Lindblom and Hannah Gregg, two really close friends of mine, played some golf with these guys, so we're excited to have them on the podcast today.
We're excited to be here.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
I think it's pretty cool. Yeah. You guys started small with like Tiger, Jason Day, and couples, and then finally you got two big names on the
now
podcast.
You're into the big celebrities.
Yeah, I mean, we had to kind of get some of that out of the way, you know, those other guys, that we convinced them, knowing that you guys would be kind of coming right down the line here, for sure.
Didn't expect
yeah,
anything.
It's about time, really.
Yeah, smart move.
All right, guys, well, we got some fun questions that we're going to kind of hit through here. First of all, before we dive into your professional golf careers and entrepreneurial pursuits, kind of what inspired each of you to pick up the game of golf? I mean, Frederick, you're from Sweden. Hannah's from the US of A. So just talk about each of you and how you kind of started playing the game.
So I always played team sports growing up back home in Sweden. Soccer, what we call football, and hockey. And, you know, I was such an individual. It was always, you know, if we won, it was because of me, right? But if we lost, it was because of my teammates. So I needed an individual sport. And my granddad introduced me to golf. And my dad thought, you know, this is a sport for old people. Like, what are you doing? But it was the first individual sport I really tried. And I loved it because it was all up to me. If I worked hard, practiced hard, I didn't have to rely on anyone else. And I felt, I mean, I got the bug, you know, I was at the course from, you know, morning until night every day. And I started on, you know, I can't even call it a muni. It was more like a goat ranch with flags on it. You know, I just loved it. So that's kind of how I got introduced to it. And then, I started grinding. I got better and I started pretty late. I started when I was 14, and then by age of 18, I got a scholarship to a smaller university in Kentucky, and that's kind of how it went for me.
My story is pretty similar in that I started late. I was about 12, and I was playing basically every other sport. I really liked basketball, and I was also riding horses and doing normal, you know, all the 12-year-old things. And then my dad heard this, like, rumor, which I'm sure you guys have heard too. This used to float around the golf world. I don't know why. But there was this rumor that there were all these unused full ride scholarships for girls.
I knew, like, where you were going there.
It's definitely not true, but it was like everyone was saying that. And my dad, you know, got this idea of, oh, hey, well, my daughter's athletic. Like, I love golf. What if I can get her a full ride for playing golf? And I ended up getting decent quickly enough to where I was hooked, because I could beat other people and I was so competitive that I was like, oh, this is fun. So the competitive aspect of it definitely hooked me. And I have a younger brother who's a year and a half younger than me. So we also got to be very competitive with each other, and it just kind of took off from there. And I improved.
Who's the better golfer? Well, put you on the spot. So who's the better golfer?
Daniel, my younger brother, was not like a prodigy, but very, very good at really fast. So going into college, he got a really good scholarship to University of Nevada, and he was much better than me. He was like ranked in the state and he had a really good amateur career. And so back then he was much better than me, but now what? I'm so much better than him. Like I crush him like all the time. So it's very nice to be a big sister now and crush him whenever I can.
Hannah, it's so funny you say that about the full ride myth, because I don't have a lot of pet peeves, but I think one of my biggest pet peeves is when people come up to me and like, oh, you play golf? Oh, I heard it's so easy to get a scholarship. And I'm like, do you realize you've seen me out here for the 6 hour, like on the putting green? Like, I think this misconception comes from the fact that there are full rides to give to female golfers because we have a small team, whereas a lacrosse team or a soccer team, there's so many players where you split the scholarship up. But it doesn't mean that you don't have to try hard, as obviously you're aware.
Yeah, when I got to college, so I ended up transferring and going to Nevada as well at the same time as my younger brother. And it was kind of funny because obviously the men's and women's team had the same amount of scholarships to give. But in the NCAA as a whole, women do have less scholarships and less money that they're able to give out. So it was kind of funny to me learning that when I got to school, because the whole time I'd been prepping for college, everyone was like, oh, they just hand money out like candy. So like, have fun.
Oh, yeah. Nope, not quite true. But Frederick, I'm curious because being from Sweden, fun fact, my mom is also from Sweden. She played at University of Arizona. She's actually teammates with Annika. So that's my Swedish connection. Flex. In the winter, it's obviously snowing. Courses are closed. So what did you do for winter practice? I know my mom, she skied like over the winter break. She didn't really play golf. But did you do any indoor work?
Yeah, so I think a good reason why you see a lot of really good Swedish golfers is because we have those winter months where we do something else. I played hockey, or it's kind of like it's called floorball, which is pretty much hockey with shoes on, and obviously a rubber ball instead of a puck. But kids become more athletic because they don't specialize in golf straight away. You know, you don't have to jump or run in golf, right? So it's hard to become athletic if all you do is just playing golf from a young age. So I think that's really beneficial. So yeah, in the winter, we did bang balls into a net, which is the most boring thing you can do. And hopefully, I didn't come from, you know, a lot of money, but hopefully once in the winter, we went to Spain for like a week and got to play on grass. But other than that, you just grind on other sports. You hit some balls into a net. But it's a fantastic question because people are like, how do you do it? But I think it really is important to become athletic, especially when you're younger, and play a lot of sports so that you can hit the ball far, you can become more coordinated. So I don't see it necessary as a something that makes it more difficult to get good at golf. That's just what's life for a Swede. So yeah, in the winter months, I did other sports, and then it helped overall, I think.
In between all the ice harvesting you have to do? Yeah, exactly.
Between riding his polar bear.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I was going to say it's such an interesting point, and I think really important for people to hear. Obviously, everyone knows that Sweden produces great players, and people continue to ask the question, how do they do it when it's so cold frequently and snows a lot? But people are adaptable. One, I think it develops a lot of grit. And to your point, the athleticism, my swing coach, John Llewellyn, he works with some other juniors. And what he's always trying to instill to these kids that he works with and tells the parents is to get them to play other sports, develop that athleticism in a more broader way. I mean, when I was growing up, I did all kinds of sport camps, basketball camps, and tennis camps. I loved rock climbing, played soccer for 6 years. So I think it just shows that you don't have to, actually the kids who start playing golf at 4 and don't play anything else usually, you know, burn out by the time they're 14 or 15.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think another thing, a reason to why you see a lot of good players in Sweden is that when I grew up, my golf course literally paid for me to go play tournaments in Sweden. It was incredible. So that the support system you have from the clubs and also the national teams, if you're really good, is unreal. Sweden just had a national team camp in Phoenix and had like 20 players there.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed going from junior golf in the US to going over to Sweden and spending a lot of time there with Fred, the support that these clubs have, like if you're, first of all, golf over there is not even close to as expensive as it is here. Yeah. they don't have these AJGA tournaments you're expected to play. They have little club events that you get sponsored to go play against other clubs. And you have this little group of kids that all do the same thing together. So it's a lot easier for them to have the resources they need to improve because, you know, they're doing it in a group and it's all put on by their club. So the way that they've managed that and their national team, I really respect it. Because such a small country producing all of these athletes, it's really cool.
Yeah, and we do, like, we have our version of, like, national tournaments and tours. And it's, like, when I grew up, it was a four-level kind of tier where, like, depending on how good you are, you played in four different divisions. So you always played against kind of the best players at your level. So you didn't get, like, beat up all the time until you maybe moved up one. So players learned, like, it's not too much fun if you start playing and every time you go out there, you're shooting in the 80s and some kids shoot under par. You're like, you just give up, right? But having four different levels, you compete against players kind of on the same level and then hopefully you can upgrade. But I think it's a great system to stay motivated and to improve, wanting to move up, but still have a chance to actually compete and not just get, you know, blown away by better players.
Yeah, that makes sense. Right. Kind of handicapped instead of like age gapped, you know, so that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and now kind of transitioning, let's talk about your professional golf career. So generally speaking, could you share with listeners what this journey has been like for the two of you? Hannah, we'll start with you.
Yeah, so my journey has been weird. Fred and I started dating in 2018, right after I graduated from University of Nevada. And I had spoken to my coach about turning pro previously. That was my plan before I even started dating Fred. But having a boyfriend who had been through it has been very helpful for me. And I feel like it's a huge advantage to have someone who can kind of help guide me through, because it's really difficult. And if you don't have a mentor or someone to help you out, it's really confusing and it's hard to know what are the right things to do. So I turned pro at the end of 2019 to go to Q School. It was like September or something. And I got not great status for the upcoming year. But then obviously the next year came around and it was COVID and everything was canceled and there was really no events for me to play in. And on top of that, Q School at the end of 2020 didn't happen. So I basically spent my whole first year as a pro not playing as a pro, which was really tough. Mm-hmm. Fred actually moved back to Sweden for that year because we didn't really know what was going on or if he needed to be at home with family. So I was kind of on my own and just practicing and trying to motivate myself to stay ready for when the opportunity came. And then I played on a tour called the Women's All-Pro Tour in 2021, which is a great little feeder tour to what used to be called the Symetra Tour, now called the Epson Tour. And I really loved those tournaments. They prepare you really, really well for the next level. So then I went to Q School again in 21, got okay status, played in a few Epson events that year, and then finally this past year I played really well at stage one of Q School, got to stage two and secured what's called category K status for next year. So I should have a little more than half of the events for next year guaranteed, which will be my best status yet. And I'm really excited. I think it should get started at the end of February, early March, so I'm just getting ready and getting ready for new experiences, I guess.
That's awesome. Congratulations. Yeah.
Yeah. Congrats. And with status, right? If you play well in your first couple events, is there a reshuffle where you can get into more tournaments?
Yes. So I can't remember if it's three or four reshuffles on Epson, but I do know there's a reshuffle after the first five events. So you're right. If I make the cut in, you know, two of the first four events, I could secure the whole rest of my season. So there's always opportunities to make your season better and better as you go.
That's awesome. Freddie, I see that you're going to get back and play a little bit more moving into next year. Kind of what's your plans to tee it up in some events?
Yeah. So when did I turn pro? 2015, I think I turned pro. And then I've been a journeyman since then. I played on the Asian Tour I played on tournaments on the Sunshine Tour in Europe, Latin America Tour, and Canada. So I've been a little bit all over the world. I lived in Dubai for 2 years after I graduated and played Asian Tour and MENA Tour events that are kind of a like local tour to Dubai. I played pretty good there. And so I kind of had it going. Then I moved back to the States and I got status on the PGA Tour Latin America and just had a horrific year, to be honest. I played really well at Q School. I think I finished... you were following me there. Yeah. I think I finished like 6th or 7th or something. But I got full status on Latin. And then, you know, the Latin Tour is literally very short. Like, so I struggled for a couple of months there. Didn't play very well. Came back. Then I got status on... the Canadian Tour, but then COVID came, so it turned out to be the, what did it call it? The Form Tour in the U.S. And it was like I played okay, and I finished 7th at Q School at the toughest site, but they only guaranteed 6 cars that year. So I got a sponsor invite to the first one. So it was kind of like a stab in
the worst thing that happened that year was halfway through the season, Canada opened up for Americans to come play more tournaments. Yeah. And Fred couldn't go because he wasn't American. He was just an American resident. Wow. Yeah. So it was like torture
for
him.
So they still closed it for Europeans. So, so it was a tough gig. But yeah, so during that time, I had to focus on other things. COVID hit, there were no tournaments and so on. But now I've got some really great opportunities and the body feels great. I'm playing the best golf I've ever played right now. So I'm definitely getting back into it and I'm pumped. It's been awesome just kind of helping Hannah, watching her ball out, you know. But I feel like I still got plenty in the tank. So I'm going to give it another go for sure.
Well, good. That's exciting to hear both of you having opportunities. Fred, I've played some golf with you. I know the games there. Hannah, I've played with you. Definitely know the games there. So it'll be exciting to see you guys kind of give it a whirl this year. And kind of now that we got COVID a little bit in the rear view, we can kind of get out there and travel some and play. So let's talk about Bridgestone. Obviously, this is another golf podcast presented by Bridgestone. We want to talk about your guys' experience with the Bridgestone ball. You know, kind of how that came to be. Frederick, I think I've heard a little bit of yours in the past, but I'd love to hear Hannah's too on how kind of that ball fits you and what got you into the Bridgestone golf ball. So first, let's start with Fred and tell us how that came to be.
Yeah, so I was in college in Atlanta. I went to Clayton State for my last 2 years. And my coach, Steve Runge, he know a guy named Todd Corum that was with Bridgestone.
Todd's the best.
Yeah. We love Todd.
Todd
is the man. Shout out to Todd, man. I've got plenty to thank him for. But he, at the time, I was playing really well. And Todd invited me out to, he sent me a couple of balls to try. And they felt great. So I put them into play. And the next week, I won in college. So I was like, wow, this is super cool. Yeah, it was great. And then Todd invited me to the headquarters there in Atlanta, and we tested out some clubs. I got some, you know, I got the full tour treatment. It's pretty cool when you're in college getting, you know, you thought you a little bit better than everyone else. So I was on, you know, walking on clouds there. I got new irons, new driver, and then I won again the next week with new irons and the driver. So I was like, what the heck is going on? And that's pretty. And then I turned out to be player of the year in my conference, and then I was going to turn pro, and I asked Todd if they could, you know, support me with some equipment in my professional career, and he said absolutely. So got the, you know, the bag, the ball, the gloves. That's back in the day when you guys still made really good golf clubs too, so I had a full bag of Bridgestone clubs, balls, gloves, was staffed out, and it was awesome. He helped me get my professional career launched. So since then, I've never played anything else. And kind of when I met Hannah, I introduced her to it. So you can take it from there. Yeah.
When I met Fred, he came to visit me in Reno, where I was still living. I was still in my college apartment. And I don't know if you guys know this, but Reno gets extremely windy. So when I was playing with Fred the first couple of weeks, I was just like, it seems like your ball is like not as affected by the wind as mine. We were playing Pro Vs at the time, which I think is just what, you know, whatever your coach gives you is what you play when you're in college. And I just noticed that it seemed like his ball kind of cut through the wind better. And I said something and he was like, oh yeah, no, Bridgestone balls. Literally, I've noticed that too, that they just kind of cut through the wind better. It's something about the cover, whatever. So I was like, okay, I remembered it, kind of forgot about it, moved on. And then later that summer, Fred arranged for me, when I was visiting him in Georgia, to come to the plant. And I also got the full tour treatment, which was very, very cool. I got to see the behind the scenes of how all the balls are made and all of that. And after doing some testing with Adam out in the like R&D area, I asked him about the wind thing. He was like, we actually hear that from a lot of players, and kind of explained to me the science behind it. So after I got that kind of behind the scenes to understanding the science behind all of it and the detail that goes into every golf ball and all of the checkpoints that hit the golf ball before it even leaves the building, I thought it was really, really cool. And I've been with Bridgestone ever since.
How many checkpoints are there, Adam?
Yeah, there's hundreds of them. And there's mechanical checkpoints, and then there's also like physical checkpoints where people are pulling balls and testing compression, you know, looking for physical visual blemishes on the ball at the end. Like, we're one of the few manufacturers, maybe the only manufacturer, that physically inspects the ball at the end. Every single golf ball is touched by a person, which is insane. I remember when I started working here and I thought, this can't be real. Why would we do this? But then you sit back there with them and, you know, they look at the markings on the ball. They're actually feeling the ball for rough spots in case, you know, some debris got on the ball in the last process. So it's pretty crazy, all the inspections that go to the ball to make sure it's the highest quality before it goes into the box and goes to a tour pro or gets sold in a shop.
Yeah, Adam, it's so interesting, and I can attest to that. Also being there when I came down in Covington, going to the factory and seeing that individual care that's treated. And Hannah, it's such an interesting point that you make about the wind with the Bridgestone ball, because when Adam and I talked to Jason Day a couple of weeks ago, he literally talked about the same thing. When he was watching Tiger, he was noticing things about the ball, and he noticed when he was hitting shots himself that the ball didn't move as much in the wind or hardly at all. So he had to readjust in a good way when he started playing Bridgestone. But I'm curious, what are the specific balls that each of you play, and what are some other components that you really like about the ball you play?
So I played the, when I was in college, I played the Tourbe X, the little firmer one, because I was hitting a little bit down on the driver, spun a little bit more. Lately, I've been improving my swing and my number, so I have actually changed to the Tourbe XS, just because, you know, I love to hit the nippers around the greens. So I know Adam, my guy, is the same.
Yes,
there. I'm gonna call you out there, Adam. Are you still using that illegal wedge?
No.
Oh, what is this?
It's still totally legal for amateurs until 2024. Yeah. My West Coast Bridgestone wedge that I absolutely love, and I mean, it's probably so flat now because I've used it so long. It's like beyond square. It's like a circle groove by now, but I love that wedge. I got to move out, but yeah, definitely like to hit the nipper with the XS as well.
Yeah, and with the XS, I mean, you can spin that ball insane amounts. You guys have seen the shots Tiger Woods hits around the greens. It's just so much control, and thanks to the fact that I'm actually hitting like 2-3 degrees up on my driver now, I can play it with no problem. It doesn't spin too much for me. So I've been using that for a while now. I know Adam has sent me the wrong ball a couple of times, but
I forget sometimes that you switched out from the X. I still think you're like young college buck hitting the X, but now you need the spin. The artistry of the XS is what you need now.
Yeah, I've got the old man ball now. Yeah.
I'm in the Tourbe RXS. And that's the one that I was originally fitted for, and I haven't changed since then. It's just a really good combination for me of feeling like I can compress it with my irons and feel like it goes long off the tee, but I also love a good nipper around the greens. Especially when when I play in tournaments near to you guys with like that grainy Bermuda, I really do see a difference in how it checks up and spins and stuff. So yeah, it's a pretty perfect combo for me.
But we're pretty pumped to come see that robot you guys got going on right now. We're going to be at the show, and I heard a robot is going to be there, right?
Yeah, we're already kind of planning on the back. We've been texting back and forth about introducing you guys formally to Auto, which is our autonomous ball fitting robot. And we're coming out with a newer updated version of that, so you guys will be one of the first one to kind of get an eyeball of that. But we're super excited because it's had a great year out in the field, doing ball fittings, you know, talking to consumers and doing the ball fittings autonomously. We built this to kind of have a little bit of an easier entryway for people to get fit, but everybody also wants to be on the launch monitor system. So we work with FlightScope, and we've built some data, and we have the software that gets you fit into the right golf ball. So we'll drop it off at a golf course, leave it there for a week, and then all the members and all the guests coming in can just walk up and have a free fitting. So we're trying to get a larger distribution footprint for this new one, and you know, lots of learnings over the past year with the algorithm and how it fits and the questions we're asking. So we're super excited for you guys to kind of take a look at it and kind of give it a whirl as well.
That sounds so cool. Yeah. Real data to get you and tell you exactly what you need. How cool is that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and we'll do that in a week or so at the PGA show. We'll be excited to have you guys down there.
Yeah, Adam giving everyone a little bit of a sneak peek of the exciting things to come. But let's transition a little bit into your business. You guys are obviously have your own business as professional golfers. That's a whole nother topic. But as well as your business called Short Game Gains, I love your tagline, tools to help you suck less on and around the greens. So tell us how this idea came about.
So like we mentioned to you guys, 2020 was a pretty boring year for us as far as pro golf goes, because Fred was stuck in Sweden most of that year and I didn't have anything to play in either. So we had been toying around with the idea of, you know, a couple of training aids that we didn't see on the market, or some changes that we would make to training aids that already existed. And we just couldn't find what we wanted. And we had also talked about the fact that if you want to have this full kit of things, like a full golfer's toolkit, you have to go to all these different places to get it. There's not just one place where you can get a full bundle of everything that you need to get started. And 2020 left us with all of this time on our hands and basically lots of pent up golf energy that we couldn't really use. So we put it into kind of designing some of the things that we would have liked to see. I studied journalism, and I would say PR is probably a part of that in school. So I was very comfortable with like Illustrator and all of those drafting programs, so I could make prototypes for us. We could test stuff out. And Fred is just chock full of golf ideas because his brain works only in golf. So he literally was just thinking of all these things that he wanted to do. And we would just make little mock-ups. And then he started, you know, sending them out to collect samples and building prototypes. And we ended up finding some stuff that we really, really liked. And we got feedback from other pros that they really liked it too. And we decided to kind of turn it into a business.
Yeah, so I kind of on the side, I've coached short game to a lot of professional players on the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, latest European Tour. So I knew kind of what the best players in the world were using to improve and how they practiced. And I saw a kind of difference there between how pros practice compared to amateurs practice. So we figured out that if we can create some really great tools, but not only that, also create kind of a teaching platform, kind of like going to the gym with a workout plan. So what you're going to see is that on our website, we have a bunch of drills and tutorials with all our products. So you're not just getting a product and good luck kind of deal, right? You get a product, you get a bunch of different drills, how you should practice. Because if you look at amateurs, when they practice putting, they throw down 3 balls 4 feet from the hole, and then hopefully they make it, and then they move on, right? And then they expect to make a 7-footer, which the PGA Tour average is 50%. So it's the way you have to practice needs to really improve if you truly want to become better at putting, which pretty much everyone needs to get better at putting, right? So that's kind of how it started, like Hannah said. And then it's grown a lot from there. We had a great feedback. And obviously, we have bigger platforms ourselves, which has helped a lot to just kind of spread the word of the company. And then we have created bigger accounts for the brand as well. across all platforms. So it's been great because it's allowed us to be able to cover expenses for professional golf or just living expenses to keep chasing the dream. So it's been fantastic for us.
Yeah, it's been really cool watching that kind of grow and you guys use it. You kind of hit on it a little bit. I was going to kind of move to that is like, you know, you guys are really good at social media. It's so fun to watch the things you do, watch where you guys play, kind of live in that. Everyone wants to live that dream of giving pro golf a go. So it's fun watching you guys kind of document that. And you know, a lot of us live vicariously through seeing those sort of things. So talk about how you kind of use social media. Kind of, is there an objective for you guys when you put stuff out? Are you just trying to educate, you know, the everyday golfer about what goes out there? Or you guys do this for truly for fun? Or how do you use your social and digital platforms?
So a cool story there. When I turned pro, I had Ricky Fowler's agent literally tell me that you got to realize when you turn pro, you become an entertainer. So you have to entertain. Mm-hmm. Ricky Fowler is a perfect example. You know, before he's even won a tournament, he had the biggest promotional deals of all tour players.
He sold a million orange hats before he, logged the W. So
he was a superstar with no PGA Tour wins. And then you have like a random PGA Tour player that you've never heard of has won twice. So it's the way you promote yourself and entertain others is easiest achieved through social media before you're a household name. So he said, it's going to come one day when a brand chooses between you and another player. You might be just as good, and the brand is going to look at, okay, one guy gets more eyeballs than the other. So if you have a bigger reach on social media, you can have a huge advantage. So I just started sharing my kind of what I did on as a professional, my journey and everything, and people started to kind of like it. And then eventually I met Hannah and I jumped on her bandwagon and I got much bigger because she's, you know, a superstar on social, pretty much.
Yeah. I guess my start was kind of similar to Fred, but I spoke to a friend of mine after I decided I wanted to turn pro in college. I talked to a friend of mine who had graduated and she was playing professionally, and I asked her, hey, if I want to prepare as a professional, like for what it's going to be like, what's the most difficult part of being a pro golfer? And I thought she was going to say, like what everyone says, living out of a suitcase or managing your time or not seeing your family. But she looked at me and she was like, finding the money to play in tournaments. And I was like, oh. So that really shifted my mindset of what I was going to focus on, because I had never thought of that, like the expenses that go along with being a mini tour golfer. Everybody thinks that they'll go to Q school one time, they'll get through, they'll get full status, and then the sponsors will come like banging the door down, right, to come help you with your dream. But it's not the case. So I sat down with my sister and we thought about, number one, a job that I could do remotely that I could still do while I was on the road. And number two, something that would help me make money while I was still playing professional golf. So we started, my senior year, we started an agency together called Cozy Co Social. And it was basically just me and my sister creating digital campaigns for a bunch of brands. And I was doing that remotely while I played in tournaments and just trying to make money on the road. And it turned into a really big, we got to work on a lot of really cool campaigns. We worked on the U.S. Open when it was at Pebble Beach. We worked for a lot of big golf brands and got to do behind-the-scenes campaigns of all sorts of things. So I wouldn't change it for the world, but my personal social media ended up kind of growing enough to the point where it didn't make sense for me to do both if I was going to chase golf full-time. So then we shifted and focused on that, and Fred was doing the same thing. So it just kind of naturally turned into us doing social media while we were playing pro golf.
And also to answer your question, if we do it for fun, for us it's business pretty much. Like it's sometimes it's fun, but sometimes it's not. But it really helps to, you know, work with bigger brands like Bridgestone, being able to offer something in return for what we're getting. Because, you know, if we had to buy golf balls all the time, that's a massive expense for a pro. So in exchange, not only because you guys like us as people and supporting us, we're able to give back in the form of a lot of eyeballs for the brand and helping the brand with stuff like this and so on. So it's a lot of business. It's not fun all the time. But, you know, when you do something really well, like winning a tournament, it's so much fun to post about it. But there's also the dark side of social media, which unfortunately there is a lot of hate. No one gets more hate than a woman trying to chase her dream on social media. It's absolutely ridiculous. And it's heartbreaking sometimes watching Hannah having to deal with it. But, you know, it's very impressive to be able to share all that stuff, because the easiest way would be just to stop posting. But she doesn't, and she keeps grinding and just kind of looked the other way.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I mean, and being so candid, because, yeah, like it's very difficult to put your life on social media. I think most people who are content creators and need to use social media or decide to use social media to elevate their careers elsewhere is not something that they would necessarily choose. I mean, you're being vulnerable putting yourself out there, but it's something that is good for your career and helps, like you said, helps literally fund your tournaments, because that's, you know, one of the hardest things. I talk to a lot of my friends who are professionals and they say the same thing, how difficult it is to go. I mean, COVID obviously was horrible for so many players, but in the off season too, you know, you go months without playing, that's months without making money. So just really awesome to hear you both share about your businesses and how you've used social media to help you in your professional golf goals. One thing I'm curious about, Adam and I are both curious, he may know more than I do, but how competitive are the two of you on the golf course? Does it get pretty intense?
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, so I think we're both probably equally competitive, which is a lot, but Fred is very like outwardly competitive and I'm more of a like quiet competitive. So it's kind of funny because our styles are so different. Fred will start like talking and getting himself pumped up and ready to go. And I'm more of like a planning, like a detail person, more of like a quiet competitive. But that is one thing that's been great for us together in the last 3 years of playing professional golf, is we're always down for a match with each other, whether it's like left-handed or one club or whatever it ends up being.
They keep it fun and interesting, because if you're a competitive person and the other is not, it's meh. You know what I mean? It's like meh.
It's not as fun.
No, exactly. So no, we love it. I mean, it's obviously all fun, but it gets pretty intense sometimes. You know, I don't want to lose. Hannah doesn't want to lose. I don't want to do the dishes. So, you know, we play for there's some big matches going on, but it also helps you because it keeps it, you know, it keeps you focused a little bit.
It's more fun now too, because when we first started dating and I was like just turning pro, Fred would always give me like 2 shots during our matches or whatever. But about a year and a half ago, he stopped giving me shots. And that's when I knew, I was like, I'm getting to him. Like, now I'm getting better at golf because Fred is not giving me shots anymore.
Yeah.
That's awesome. To end out this podcast, thank you both for taking your time to talk with Adam and I. But let's talk about your goals for the year. Golf, business, whatever you guys want to touch on. But Hannah, I'm sure you potentially have your eyes on the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I've qualified for the U.S. Open attempted to qualify every year that I've been able to. I didn't get to do it last year. But I did get to attend at Pine Needles, which was very cool. So I do plan on doing the regular qualifying again. It would be super special to get to play in it at Pebble. The last one that I tried to qualify for was at Olympic Club. So these are like, you know, iconic California venues that I grew up watching tournaments at, which would be really, really cool. My goals, basically, as far as on the Epson Tour, I would love to, my first goal is to get a top 25 that's on my goal sheet on my wall at home. And then I would love to get a win on the Epson Tour this year, keeping my card obviously for next year, and then eventually making it to final stage and getting my tour card. My goal overarching that I've always had is to be on the LPGA Tour by the time I'm 30, and I'm turning 27 in February. So I've got some time, but we got some work to do. Yeah, I got time, but I got work to do. So those are my kind of general goals. Fred and I did a little goal meeting at the beginning of this year and kind of mapped out our plan and how we plan on reaching them. So I have some small goals too. I want to hit 105 club speed by the end of the year, just small things like that.
Yeah, and for me, it's, you know, getting back into it this year. I'm going to play a Canadian tour, but the Canadian tour and the Latin tour is not as good as it used to be. They don't give the same opportunities anymore to kind of get to the Corn Ferry, but it's still a pretty decent, you know, it's a really good competition. You still play good tournaments. So I'm going to try to qualify back to get onto Canada. I think this is the first week of April is the Q's Golf Canada. And then I'm going to do a lot of Monday Q's for Corn Ferry. That's kind of my game plan this year, and then obviously Q school by the end of the year. But just getting back to it, now I have the opportunity that I've never really had before with fully funded. I can really go all in, thanks to all the hard work we've done the last couple of years. So it's super, super exciting. Obviously, we have small goals. I have small goals as well. We have a goal, we have it all written down. But the game plan for me is getting back, feeling comfortable, and then really try to perform as well as I can at Q School by the end of the year.
Well, that's awesome. Super exciting that you guys are getting back out there hardcore and getting to play. Can't wait to kind of catch up with that. But so nice having you on today. Love talking to you guys. You're like my little golf BFFs that I love to catch up with sometimes. So I'm excited that you guys got this really cool game plan. Love seeing the success you guys have had from a digital standpoint. I personally love that. And just best of luck to you guys this year. But tell everybody where they can look at for your social handles and then for short game gain stuff.
Yeah, well, first off, Adam, thank you, because you were one of our first sponsors for both of us back in the beginning. So we also really appreciate your friendship and helping us along the way. If you want to follow us, you can find me on Instagram at HannahBGG, and Short Game Gains is at Short Game Gains. You can also Google it, and we have hyperlinks to everything on our website. And Fred's is his name. So
Frederick Lindblom, try to spell that.
Oh, geez, yes, yeah. Love it. That wasn't taken? I can't believe it.
Exactly. It's unreal. Yeah. So, yeah. And the website of Short Game Gains is also www.shortgamegains. So it's as simple as that. So that's where you can find us.
Well, cool. Well, again, thank you guys for coming on. It was a pleasure to talk to you. And we'll be talking more in a few weeks down at the show. So thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. Good luck to you guys.
Thank you both.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, this was so great to talk with Hannah and Frederick. I am currently now two new fans. I'm really excited to follow their career, and what they have already accomplished is so incredible and really shared some great things that we can kind of analyze here, Adam. I think the first thing is just the grind of a professional. I mean, Frederick talking about how many different tours he's been on and Hannah having to battle through being a professional and also a pandemic where mm-hmm. there was no events to play. I mean, it's a difficult lifestyle.
Yeah, they talked about it. It's such a total grind. You know, everybody gets into the majesty of the PGA Tour, which is amazing, but there's definitely a grind on the backside of it, of these guys coming out of college, especially the ones coming out of college in the last few years and having to kind of work around what had happened in the environment of COVID. And, you know, getting exemptions, and then exemptions kind of went away. You know, Frederick talked about it. He had, you know, basically Latino America status, and then the year got cut down. So it was really good hearing that from that perspective and kind of learning what they kind of go through to try to keep that pro career going. And I can't be more excited for those guys to get these opportunities. It sounds like they got some good chances in 2023 to give it a run and really focus on their game.
Speaking of that, it was really cool to learn the creativity that has gotten involved and
the business mm-hmm. that they have created when it comes to funding for their professional dreams. I hadn't heard of Short Game Gains before they had spoken of it, and it just seems like an incredible platform for not only professional golfers to be able to use products to improve their game, but also for the everyday golfer to have this platform where you can get kind of everything you need to improve in golf in one area.
Yeah, the ingenuity of those two to just kind of go at it and do those type of things, make the products, you know, the best thing they have too is that insider baseball knowledge of what it takes to practice and the tools needed. And they've done a really good job, like Hannah said, of packaging up these kits that can help you play better and kind of give you a competitive edge and give you the things. Rather, like Frederick said, most people just drop down three balls, they put a 3 or 4 footer, and then they scoop them and they head to the first tee. Whereas, like, really, if you put in a little bit extra time, you know, 10 or 15 minutes even before your round, and put the mirror down or put the laser on the club and line up some putts and make sure your face angle's right, that totally helps. It's where on the first hole, when you put that 15-footer, you're kind of guessing out there, and takes that away from it. So the entrepreneurship of those guys is really admirable, that they were able to kind of do that and help, you know, lengthen their opportunities. And, you know, some people would have maybe given up and not had the opportunity to kind of keep going. And it's really good. Those two are such great people. It's really good to see them to kind of keep and giving the run and giving themselves the opportunity.
Yeah, I am such fans. And it's funny too when you talk about the products and that they're creating and how important it is to help people's game. I mean, when I put out a chalk line before I go tee off, I usually always do a chalk line, find a straight putt. There'll be members that will come up to me after and be like, oh, I used your chalk line and I putted so well today. Yep. And I'm like, well, there is actually a little bit of a correlation there. So yeah, it's so cool to see what they have done in their careers, and very excited to also that we have a special podcast next week coming out, which will be very exciting for our listeners.
Yeah. Like I mentioned in the front end, the PGA show is coming up here soon, and we've got some guests coming on from Bridgestone to talk specifically about some amazing product and equipment coming out very soon. We're going to bring on Dan Murphy, our president and CEO, and he's going to kind of discuss Bridgestone in the industry. We're going to bring on Elliot Mello, who's our golf ball lead, and he will be talking about all the awesome new products that we'll be bringing to the market here in about a week. So we're excited about that. R&D has been working hard on these golf balls. Manufacturing has been working hard on making them perfect. And in marketing, we're just so excited to kind of talk about them and kind of launch them to the general public. So we're looking forward to that. So with that, we'll say goodbye and best of luck to Hannah and Greg. And thanks for having those guys on. But then also stay tuned for an extra special emergency podcast next week that we're going to launch in between of our 2-week window that will be all about the PGA show and all about the new product coming out.
Until next week on another golf podcast presented by Bridgestone.
Another golf podcast is presented by Bridgestone's new line of Tour B golf balls with a reactive IQ cover. Reactive IQ is a smart cover technology that reacts to the force of impact. It rebounds quickly on tee shots, delivering explosive velocity and increased distance. And around the green, the reactive IQ cover stays on the face longer, providing more spin and control. Bridgestone Golf is the pioneer and industry leader in ball fitting, and the 4 new models of Tour B are designed to ensure every golfer is playing the right ball for their game. The Tour BX and XS models are ideal for players with driver swing speeds over 105 miles per hour, and the RX and RXS were created for golfers with driver swing speeds under 105 miles per hour. To find the right ball for your game, go to bridgestonegolf.com and click Find My Ball to go through the online ball selector guide. Bridgestone Golf, the number one ball fitter in golf.